What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have basketball coach. That's the title we're going to use for right now. He's in transition. Was most recently at Harvard Westlake, yep. Winning a ring. A couple rings there. Yep. And the founder and, well, yeah, he's the founder and no longer the CEO of Los Angeles Elite Basketball. Yep. Right?
That's all that, correct. That's
husband.
Husband.
Our father?
Not yet.
We're going to find out. Anyways.
We'll get there.
Mr. Russell Payne.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Absolutely.
We start this off with the wall of hoop movies.
Yes.
Our wall is on the floor for now. your favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
He Got Game. And He Got Game is because of the father-son dynamic and the relationship in the movie. My father put the ball in my hands, and it's something that we could always bond over, even if we were not always on the same page outside of hoops. Mm-hmm. But hoops was always the common denominator. It was something we both loved together, and it's something we were able to grow together, father and son. So that's why it's my favorite movie.
Man, it's interesting because I don't know if it was a healthy relationship with them mm-hmm. in that the basketball game, but
yep.
I guess you see the connection that there was. It was, you know, where they can first meet, you know, him not knowing or seeing him for years.
Of course.
Prison and mom. Oh, crazy.
I know. It's, it's just a dynamic that at the end of the day, like, they found common ground through the sport of basketball.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I related with my father. We didn't always see eye to eye on things, you know. There's always, relationships are hard, right? Yeah. But we definitely found common ground with hoops.
Absolutely. That's dope. So when did you fall in love with basketball?
I think it's been a lifelong thing because of my father. I started playing when I was 5. He was a diehard Lakers fan, always screaming at the TV. So it was always on. It was always around. Did multiple sports growing up, but got to 6th grade and just wanted to be a basketball player. And looking back at it, I think that's because I wanted to continue to build a relationship with my father. He was always in my life, but it wasn't always the easiest. But I loved hoops. He loved hoops. So I felt it was common ground to kind of build on for more factors than just the love of the sport.
No, that's good that you recognize that one, and I think it's important for kids to recognize that at the young age. You did it to connect with him, but also I'm sure you didn't do it for him.
Correct.
And so knowing the balance of being motivated or encouraged by the spark that gave me an interest in doing it, but then also being able to understand that it's actually for you, the game itself, at least.
It was always my passion. It was never doing it for him. Mm-hmm. It was doing it with him.
No, it's good to know. And mm-hmm. for those who are, what would you say to those who are doing it for their parents?
Stop doing it. I mean, look, and I just briefly talked about this on another segment, is the understanding that if you don't do something with passion or love or care for it, then it's not worth your time or those around you their time or their money as well, right? Like, it's so hard, athletics in all sports, in all facets. So if it's something that you're just not quite sure about, go put your time and invest in something that you enjoy or that you're really good at and you feel like you can make it a career down the line.
Yeah.
So living vicariously, you know, through your kids it's a tough pill to swallow. And your kid, you know, you'll grow distant with each other because of it.
That's always tough. Great advice.
Yep.
Good stuff. So from 5 years on, and then 6th grade is when you took it serious.
Started taking it seriously, yep.
Okay, so what changed at that age besides you wanting to do it, but what changed in the basketball world?
Yeah, so funny story, I was playing rec ball, RBYB, Redondo Beach. My dad was my coach at the time, and I got voted on the second all-star team for RBYB. And my mom tells me, like, hey, you made the all-star team. And my dad's like, I don't know how, I didn't vote for him. Right? So right then and there, I was like, oh, wait a minute. If my own dad didn't want to vote for me for an all-star team, like, maybe I'm okay at the time. And I was a little taller. I was 5'7", 5'8", in sixth grade, which always helps. Started club basketball in sixth grade and just kind of fell in love with the process of getting better and growing. And went to El Segundo High School as a freshman. The day I got moved up to varsity was actually a day I actually tore my ACL for the first time too. So didn't have the best playing career. I tore my ACL 3 times in high school.
Same ACL?
Nope. Oh. So I tore one, my right, then I tore my left my junior year when I moved to Redondo Union, my junior year. And then 2 months later on my left knee, my graft popped. So third one. And then I had surgery junior year, like March. And at that point. I was going to play my senior year of high school, but I started coaching, actually, at this facility called the Hacks. So Hanger Athletic Exchange. It was in the Hawthorne Airport. Mm-hmm. The membership was $60 a month. I'll never forget. I said, Mom, I want a membership to the Hacks. She's like, we're not paying for that. We can't afford it. Like, figure it out. So I go up to the guy who's running it. His name was Derek, and he says, well, if you just help me out with our academies twice a week, 4:30 to 9 p.m., just give help, then you can get a free membership. It's like, done. Not realizing that I'm working for probably $2.50
right,
at the time.
But
like,
9 hours a week.
You know, you love hoops. It was a six-court facility. I wanted to be around it, and I got into coaching that way. So I'm 17 years old. One of their coaches at the time, he's coaching a 13U team, and he has to go to Philippines for a funeral. And he's gone for a month, and they didn't have a replacement coach. So I said, hey, do you want to coach this team? And I'm like, they're only 4 years younger than me. Like, I've never coached before. He's like, you'll be fine. They suck. Like, don't worry about it. Like, just, you know, make them happy, right? Had one practice. They hadn't won a game in a few months. First tournament we go out there, we go 2-2 in the tournament. And from there, I was like, oh, coaching's kind of fun, and I don't have to get hurt. It really didn't stop me from getting hurt. I kept getting hurt, but I kept getting hurt. But just fell in love in coaching then. And my senior year, my coach, I asked him like, "Hey, can I play and coach and do both and work on the schedule?" He said no. So I said, "You know what? I'll just coach."
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's a dope way to stay with the game.
Yeah.
And the injuries to not stop you from sticking with this game. Like, a lot of people get dissuaded and just move away from that. Where is it just weak knees, or like what was it, were they all like situational type tears, or what was it?
I want to say weak constitution for sure. I really don't know. I think the biggest thing is that I loved playing the game of basketball, like actually going out and playing. Mm-hmm. I loved playing at the park. I loved playing pickup. I loved just being in the gym. Now, as far as like weightlifting and, you know, maybe eating right and proper mm-hmm. sleep, those were not things that I was too keen on. And I'm not going to say that's the reason, but I could see it being a factor in, you know, why I wasn't able to stay healthy. So I think that's part of the reason. But they were all one-off incidents. It's like all non-contact. Mm-hmm. One going up for a dunk, just knee buckled. Second one going for a jump stop, like leg gets stuck underneath me. Just non-contact injuries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man.
I know.
Praying for your knees.
Yep.
No more tears.
We're hopefully good, man. I'm done. No more lower body, upper body injuries.
So you probably had so much surgery that everything's stronger now, right?
You would think. I still don't have an ACL in my right knee. I didn't want to get one fixed.
Oh, okay.
And I was just like, you know what? I'm not playing anymore. Like, I'm okay.
That makes sense.
But I've had 12 surgeries.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Oh, too many.
Too many, yeah.
Too many.
So. Let's be done.
Yeah, we're done at 12.
We're speaking that over.
Yeah, we're done at 12.
That's awesome. Starting a coaching career at a young age.
Yep.
Because there's people who start, you know, right out of high school or fresh out of college. You know, what were the biggest obstacles for you, and how did you see yourself overcoming those through that phase?
Yeah, it was really hard, you know, being 17, coaching 13-year-olds, dealing with parents, them knowing your age, them not thinking you're qualified or able to coach. So handling parents at a young age was probably the biggest challenge because they just feel like you're not capable to coach their child. Even if you win games, even if you do well, even if they're getting better, they're looking for an excuse. So that was really difficult for me at that young age, but I think it prepared me for what was to come, right? Like, I dealt with issues at that time to where the organization I was working with said, hey, like maybe 13's too old, so go coach 9U. So I had to kind of work my way around and figure out how to coach and how to communicate. Very passionate, very emotional. I love to talk crap, I guess is the easiest way to say that. So sometimes I would get a little negative. So just working through those as a young coach.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when did you take a big jump in your coaching? You recognize like, all right, I like this. You already seemed like you liked it.
Yep.
When did you seem like, okay, I'm going to take this as a profession and move to that next level?
Yeah, interesting. So Hacks closed down, I believe, in 2011. So there was like little clinics at a Boys and Girls Club when they closed down, and I was running. They asked me to run them, so I started running them. This dad came up to me and was like, can you coach my son's FOR team? FOR stands for Friends of Richard. It's an Asian League basketball program, and they have a few different leagues in California. And I was like, I don't know. And then he's like, well, I'll pay you $50 an hour. And I was like, okay, I'm 19 years old, $50 an hour. It sounds great to coach basketball. So that team actually was formed because they had a group of 10 kids. Five of the kids felt like they were too good to play with the other five. So they left and formed their own team, and I was left with the remaining five. And they added two or three kids. And I'm like, this is Asian League, friendship basketball. What is happening right now, right? Man. So first tournament, we go to Vegas. It's like a Vegas tournament. And the scoreboard gets turned off every game. Every game. And I'm like, I don't know what I signed up for. This is crazy. So we're at the lowest level, a bronze level Asian League team. And within a year, we kind of moved up to gold. Nice. Every time we played the other program with the five kids that left, which were called the Rebels, we beat them. So we never lost,
sweet,
which was always nice.
Yeah.
It was really good for the kids, right? It meant a lot to them, and it meant a lot to the families, and obviously it meant a lot to me because I was really passionate, and if you think you're not good enough, we'll show you what that looks like. So I'm overly competitive, unfortunately, at times. My wife isn't a fan, but she understands.
I'm in the same. My wife does not compete in anything. She will not. She hates it.
I hate it.
So, yes. No, same boat.
Serena will definitely compete, but she knows when I get to a point, she's like, you got to stop. It's too much. So we did that, and then the kids were getting asked to play club basketball. And they were like, hey, coach, start a program. And I'm like, I've already coached club. It was political. It was about the money. It wasn't something that I really enjoyed. And they're like, well, we're not going to play club unless you're our coach. So it's 2013. I'm 21 years old. I'm like, all right, so what do I name it? And I just Googled club names. City at Elite. Simple. We're in Los Angeles at Elite. We got a club program. So it was a sixth grade team. We had eight kids. It formed with most of those Asian League kids. And I said, you know what? I'll just do it for 2 years until you guys are done with eighth grade, and then I'm done. And we started playing, and we started clinics, and then just month after month, it just kept growing. We started at Veterans Park in Carson. And after one or 2 years, we had six or seven teams. Wow. When I was supposed to be done with that group, we had about six or seven teams. We had a skills clinic every Monday with about 50 kids. Man. And I was working actually as a physical therapy aide. On the side, just to be able to pay bills. And I enjoyed that, so I was going to go to school for physical therapy. Mm-hmm. And the program got so big that, at my job for physical therapy, they were like, Russ, you got to be off your phone. And I'm like, you're right. So I quit. I quit right then and there, just because I couldn't do both. And if I had to choose basketball or physical therapy, it was an easy choice. So I just started going full on with our club program in 2016. And then we got to the point where we had 16, 17 teams, camps, tournaments, and it was beautiful.
What do you accredit that quick success? That's to build a basketball business that fast, that successful, in that amount of time. What do you credit that to?
Relationships matter. I think how you treat people, how you show genuine care for individuals, the relationships you have with players, parents, those in the basketball community. It's a big community, but it's very small at the same time. So I think if you're able to just be genuine with who you are and you put the right things first, you're going to get positives back. So that was just a staple. Treat people well.
And from an organizational standpoint, you're 19, 20, 21.
Yeah.
How'd you stay organized managing that many kids and accepting payments? And I'm talking about the operations of the stuff.
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know. It felt like a whirlwind. It still feels like a whirlwind. We had a structure where we collect individual tournament fees every weekend too. So just use a spreadsheet. Hope you get as much money as you can to cover the expenses.
Yeah.
And you figure it out. We lost money for the most of the beginning years. We had to pick kids up in South Central LA, take them to their tournaments. They're supposed to have tournament fees. They don't have it. They don't have any food, so buy them food, take them all back, and then do it again the next day at 6 a.m. So we did that for a few years just to try to help kids out that wanted to play and wanted to be here. But organizationally, it's tough. It was tough. I just went with the flow.
Yeah. I remember when I first started Core, it was like literally had a piece of paper with people's credit card information, inputting it every month to make sure I was getting paid, and then not knowing taxes and the real world of business and how to operate it.
Yeah, so we did cash and checks, and that was it. And actually, like, I think like our third and fourth year, we got audited back to back years as a business, because I was just like, and then all of a sudden, like, my mom retired from her job. She was about that time, and she was like, I'm going to help you. And mom saved the day with some of the organizational stuff, and she's really good with finances. So I didn't want to do any of it. I didn't really want to be a business owner. That wasn't a plan. Like, I just wanted to coach. I just wanted to be around basketball. So the business side wasn't easy, and it still isn't easy, right? Like, but if there's a basketball, if there's a gym, if there's players that want to go, that's kind of what I'm passionate about.
That's awesome. Yep. And so your experience at the Hacks, right? The Hacks was popping in LA for the amount of time that it was there.
Huge.
I wish. Do you know why it stopped, first off?
I do. I do know why it stopped.
Can you tell? Me and my friends argue about this.
Yeah,
The best answer you can.
The best answer I can is the CEO and the individual who was financing the Hacks didn't see eye to eye with the vision and what the business plan looked like.
Got it.
So there was a date at the Hawthorne Airport, and that date was to either renew the lease or cancel the lease. Mm-hmm. And the guy who was financing it decided on his terms that he wanted to not renew the lease. So they moved to Harbor City for a second location. But that just didn't last very long. It wasn't the same traction. Just a falling out.
Yeah, man, that was our hub. It was the spot.
It was the best.
Yeah.
And you felt so good being in there. Like, bright lights, huge fans. I think the layout was fantastic. Special place. Yep. First of its kind, before Next Level.
Right.
Before Maps.
That was it. Mm-hmm. It was like to go to, it was like a field trip for basketball players. Like, oh, we're going to the Hacks to play. Like, this is awesome.
So, yeah, that's why I wanted to be in there. I was working, you know, 4.5 hours a week, you know, or a day, I'm sorry, twice a week, 9 hours a week just to get a $60 membership.
Just to go in there.
They gave me a team, and then they ended up giving me like $180 a month. Like, it was nothing, but I loved it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Going from the AAU ball to high school ball.
Yes.
Right, so you transitioned. What was your first high school job at?
Yeah, so 9 years ago, not knowing anything about coaching or applying for jobs or how that looks like, the varsity position at Rancho Dominguez Prep opened up. And I applied. Just, I'm going to apply. It's open. And that's where we were kind of doing some practices for LA Elite at the time. So I got an interview, wore my purple tie, went in there, didn't get it, obviously, because I have zero high school coaching experience.
Right.
They asked me if I wanted to be a volunteer coach, and I was like, sure. Like, I'll start. So they told me they would let me know when it was going to start. About a month later, I got a call from Ryan Quinlan at Peninsula. Mm-hmm. I was training one of the kids on the Frostoff team. They had an opening for a Frostoff coach. The parent recommended me. And he's like, hey, Russell, I've heard really great things about you. Like, would you like to be our Frostoff coach? We don't have anybody. And I was like, okay, well, what are the details? He's like, it pays $2,500 for the season. I was like, oh, I'm going to get paid? Like, I'm gonna get paid? Like, yes, I'm in.
Volunteering time to trade gym.
I'm in. Right? And like, I never even started the Rancho Dominguez Prep job. Like, it didn't even happen. They didn't even hire a head coach. They just wanted me around because they thought I could help. But so he gave me the opportunity. 1 year as a Frostoff coach there, we did really well. I enjoyed it, but I thought Frostoff basketball was hard to coach.
Yes, it is.
So told Coach Quinlan, like, hey, like, if I'm not able to coach JV next year, I'm probably not going to come back. So I ended up not coming back just because he couldn't make the decision right then and there. And then I ended up going to Crossroads as an assistant varsity coach. Did that.
This under AD?
This was under Chad Beaton for the 1 year that Chad was there. So I was working with AD there, and we made open division. And it was my first real experience of what basketball should look like.
It's 2017.
2016, probably 2016.
Okay.
2016.
2017, yeah.
Yeah, it was that
first
year.
This is when 16 teams were in the open. Yeah.
Yes, 16 team bracket. Yeah. First round, modern day, lost by 45.
Ooh.
It was ugly. That was Justice Suing, Spencer Friedman, like.
Yeah, no, they were, yeah, no, I remember, because that was the year Heritage, and we played Sierra Canyon. We were the 15 seed, you guys were the 16 seed.
Yeah. I think we were 14. I think we were 14.
Something
like
that.
We were 14. They were 3.
Anyways, it was like, why are we in the open? We should not be here. But yeah. Great that we were considered at the same time.
And crazy enough, we lost that first game. So our next game was against Redondo Union, who lost. And that was against Rise Williams when Vic Martin was the coach. And Rise was kind of sick that game. I think he threw up at halftime. Wow. Came back, hit the game winner to beat us. And then unfortunately he passed away a few months later from cancer. Man. But I mean, it was just incredible player, incredible moment for him. And like, that's one of those divine, you know, opportunities that kind of you can't beat.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. So Crossroads, open division.
Yeah.
Went from Frostsoft and wherever.
Yep.
no offense to Peninsula.
No. Palos Verdes. Yeah. Just Bay League.
To big boy basketball.
Yep.
And what did you learn coming from even Peninsula to a big private school, right? I think it's different basketball in private schools in Southern California.
Yep. There's better players out there than you realize. The structure of practice matters, right? Like having a plan, right? Like a lot of coaches say like, oh, this is what we're going to do today. But it's based on, well, what are you going to do today, tomorrow, yesterday, next week? Like, what are we building up for? Like, what is the end goal we're trying to accomplish in this month? So Chad did a really good job of that organizationally. And then positional skill work. Like, we would just do skill work to do skill work as a Frostsoft coach. Like, everyone's going to dribble. Everyone's going to shoot.
Right.
Like, everyone's going to post up. Like, now, like, we have to give them skill work that's going to flow for their role and for our offense. I was green. Like, I didn't know too much about it. I had good coaches growing up, but nothing like that. So, learned a lot there.
No, being intentional, it sounds like, about every little detail.
Yep.
And I'm sure you felt that everywhere you coached since.
Yes.
Right.
And yes.
How important that is. What were you doing to develop your kids at LA Elite that was working, that even though, you know, there's this higher level of basketball, but what you were doing at this middle school level was working. What were you doing then that you kind of carried over to high school coaching as well?
So I think like club basketball, it's really hard to focus on development based on finances of gym time and how many days a week you're trying to practice, right? So the biggest thing was just teaching concepts. Like, and it might seem simple, but like defensive fundamentals, like, are we going to deny? Are we going to be in the gaps? How are we guarding ball screens? Like, simple as shell defense. Like, because a lot of the kids, unfortunately, we would get, even for club, might not really know what shell is, right? And so just going over the defensive side of the ball really was a main concept for LA Elite. And then not running sets. In LA Elite, we just didn't really want to run sets. Like, a coach would have a couple, but originally it was, we have to teach them how to play. How do we use pin downs? How do we use flares? How do we properly use ball screens? How do we move without the ball? When are we looking to cut? Like, because we have short time with them. So if we can just teach them concepts that they bring back to their high school, they would be better off.
Yep.
So we started as a middle school program with LA Elite, and we turned into a high school program. Yep. And we started getting kids that were like, oh, they're kind of good, but we had zero college connections. Wow. So me and a couple staff members at the time, we went on Google, and there was probably an easier way to do this, but we just didn't know it. So we went to every single college's basketball website, and we copied and pasted every single email for every division. We're talking about D1, D2, D3, NAIA, JC, every single one. I bought a MailChimp account, put it into MailChimp, and we started sending out email blasts with our players. And their highlights and just who they were.
You coaches suck. If you're not doing the grind work to get your kids recruited, do that. Don't make up any excuses.
Well,
oh my gosh.
Well, now there's a platform where you can just buy an email list and then get it that way.
Okay.
And they update it every month. Like, you pay a one-time fee.
But still, like,
that's how we started.
Exactly what I'm saying is like people don't even know to go look for that on the internet. Like,
no.
How I'm gonna get you recruited, or not calling coaches for your kids. Don't, like, doing what you can, man.
Yep.
Like, that's what this is about, the passion for the game.
Yes.
And to get them to the next level, man. I'm passionate about terrible coaches. And that makes you a terrible coach if you're not giving kids who have that opportunity to play on the next level that opportunity with all the effort that you have.
Yeah.
I love it.
You coach basketball, at least in my opinion, to be a servant leader. Right? Like, you should want to be able to put your players first because you want to give them something that either you did have and you think they should have those same characteristics, qualities, or that experience, or something you didn't have and you want them to experience something better than you did, right? Like, I didn't get to play college basketball. I would have died to play college basketball. So my kind of give back for that was like, well, how many kids can we help go play college basketball? And if it's JC or all the way up to D1, it doesn't really matter. Like, just giving them a platform to do that. And when you first start, all the tournaments that you're supposed to be in, you can enter, right? You can enter, you know, like the NCAA viewing period tournaments.
Yes.
But it's really important that you know who's running the tournament, you know what teams are entering the tournament with you, and what court can you get on.
Right.
So at that time, the biggest events were the Pump Brothers. So the Pump Brothers really had big viewing periods. And then you had Dinos, who had big viewing periods. So when we started entering these tournaments, we were like, oh, we're here. And then we're on court 19 in the third gym.
With
you
one,
know,
light, one light on.
Exactly. So I'm like, well, how do we get our guys? And it's all about relationships. Like, so how we were building relationships with college coaches, I would have to do the same thing with tournament operators.
Yep.
Like, okay, we'll support multiple events, but I need to get in that pool. Like, or I need to play that team once.
Yep.
And slowly but surely, it started to pay off. So you kind of wish that you had it from the beginning so you could help that first generation of kids. But that first generation of LA Elite kids set the path for the rest of our program.
Right.
Yep. So it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome to build something from the ground up, and something that you were going to stop doing turn into this monster that was a resource for your life, and more importantly, a resource for others' lives.
Yep.
And like, I think that's the part about when you're a genuine coach, a genuine leader, where it's like that's just a natural part of you that this thing just grew because you were doing the right thing in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And so that's a, you know.
You try. There's still going to be people that don't like you or like what you do,
right?
But you just let that feel you.
Yep.
Like, you're like, okay, maybe I didn't serve that player as well as I could, so how do I do that for the next person that's unhappy, right? And you do the best you can with what you got and, you know, you figure it out.
Let it roll. That's it.
Yep.
All right, so what happened after Crossroads? You're at Crossroads. How many years did you coach?
One year. Chad resigns. Yeah. AD takes over. AD asked me to stay on. I love AD. He's a great person. And I just wasn't sure. So Ali Parvas gets the head job at Redondo Union. And he asked me, like, hey, do you want to come on and be my associate head coach? Like,
man,
you can come on and kind of help me run everything. And I was like, man, it's back at the school that I kind of went to, and it's in that South Bay area where our club program was. So I was like, let's do it. So I joined him, and Crossroads actually wins state. So I joined Redondo, Crossroads wins Division III state, and I'm upset because, like, damn, they won. But that was the best development year of my career.
Why?
He let me literally do everything.
Wow.
If we walk in the office, Russ, what do you want to do for practice? Like, what are we doing? So we're collaborating on everything. Russ, what are we doing defensively? Collaborating everything. He'd let me lead film sessions. He'd let me put the scouting reports on the board and put them together. And those reps, I'm so grateful for him. Like, he didn't, even if it was wrong, even if it wasn't great, he'd be like, no worries, let's go. Let's keep working on it. Like, he really took a passion and pride in my development as a coach.
That's awesome.
And that was huge. That was huge.
That's what it's about. I think some coaches don't do that, right?
Yeah.
And if you are a coach looking for that opportunity, find a coach. Like you said, you missed out on the state title at one spot, but you got something that probably led you to where you are today and being able to have a hands-on experience as a head coach without the responsibility, which is amazing for somebody to put that into your hands.
Yeah.
And so,
it's hard because sometimes as an assistant, especially a new assistant, I've only done 2 years of high school basketball at this time. Like, you want to win.
Yeah.
Like, and I want to win. Like, it's so valuable to win. We love winning. But, and I'm not going to say he sacrificed winning for my development or our staff's development, but he made it work together. And I give him credit because I don't know if I could do what he did. Right? It's hard. It's very difficult.
For sure. For sure. So how long were you at Redondo?
1 year.
All right, one and done again.
All right. I've always had a fascination to climb. That's right? The reason I left, I didn't want to leave. I actually wanted to stay. MiraCosta job opened. They're building a brand new $40 million gym. I'm going to apply, right?
Absolutely.
So I apply. Don't get an interview, don't get it. The AD at the time is Glenn Marks. And I see him, he was working for Rockfish at the time. And I see him in a gym, Westminster High School. I'll never forget the moment. I go up to him. I'm like, Glenn, my name is Russell Payne. I, you know, applied for the job. I know you guys hired Neil Perlmutter, who was at West Torrance. I think you made a fantastic hire. I just wanted to let you know. And I walked away. And because Neil just came off of a like a CIF Division IV championship, he was tied in with that Rockfish community, and I thought it was a really good hire for MiraCosta. And it's still, it's shown to be a good hire. MiraCosta's right. been, you know, yeah. probably as strong as they've ever been. So with Neil leaving, obviously West Torrance is open. I call that my AD, the AD at the time is Bill Atkinson, and he's was a legendary girls coach at West Torrance, mm-hmm. won a couple CIF championships, but he was towards the tail end of his AD career. He calls me back right away. He's like, I know who you are, like, come in for an interview. And I prepared a 26-page book for the job. So I'm 26 years old. I don't have a bachelor degree, by the way. Mm. And I put together a 26-page book on what I was going to do with West Torrance and why I'm the man for the job. So I come in, got my suit on, I give him my book, and I can pretty much remember what I put into it. And him and the assistant principal were just floored. Yeah. Like, they're like, wow, this kid at the time, 26 years old, trying to be a head varsity coach, came in this prepared. So then I have a meeting with the principal. I bring her a 6 to 7 page community plan. So I'm not even focused about basketball. The principal doesn't want to hear about basketball. She wants to know, how are you going to impact West Torrance and how are you going to make the school a bigger platform? So I come on.
Where did you learn all this from?
I'm a sponge. Like, I just...
You just figured that calls. This is the best route in talking to other people.
You just talk to as many people as possible. When we were going through the whole, like, college email thing, mm-hmm. you start building relationships with college coaches. You're at crossroads. You start building relationships with college coaches. So then I started visiting their practices. I started seeing what they were doing. I started seeing how they operate. I had conversations with them. I'm like, what do they do with their teams? What do they do with their families? Like, just, just building relationships. Like, it comes back all to relationships. And truly trying to get to know who people are. So, you know, I'm applying for this job, and I'm like, I'm calling college coaches, like, well, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Like, what do I do? And he's not going to remember this, but I remember it. Ryan Frazier, he's the head coach at Pasadena City right now, junior college. And he was, I think right before he just was at MiraCosta JC down in San Diego, and he sent me his book on how he applied for MiraCosta and what that looked like. And I looked at it, and I'm like, man, this is really good stuff. And I didn't take everything, but I just took bits and pieces here and there. I implemented who I was, and that's kind of how I learned it.
That's awesome.
So started doing those things. I wanted to be, I think preparation is so key. Like, so I wanted to be prepared.
Yeah.
So I get the job at 26 with 3 years of high school coaching experience. And I was a head coach at West Torrance for 2 years. We... Two winning seasons, didn't win a playoff game though. And we lost our first playoff game by 3 in overtime. And then we lost our second year playoff game by 1 in regulation. So for me, I was like, I'm not good enough. Like, I'm missing something. There's something I just don't really know. And then COVID hit. So that was the COVID year. And I was like, well, what's next? Like, I can stay here and learn on my own, but I know what I know. Like, I can learn from the internet and calling people, but how do you be engulfed with somebody that you're going to grow from? So I decided to leave West Torrance. I was able to help Josh Livingston, who was my JV coach at the time. So he got the varsity job, and he's still there.
Nice.
So he just finished year 4, which is amazing. And I was fortunate enough to win a league championship my second year there, which, you know, was great. I mean, we won something. I wasn't satisfied because we couldn't win a playoff game, but... great kids, great families. They believed in me. The administration believed in me. It was just one of those things where I was like, I have to sacrifice being a head coach to become a better coach.
Yeah.
So I was looking for a place to be an assistant, and I only wanted to be an assistant at a top program. So There's a few options, a few choices, but I knew the other coaches a little better than I knew Dave for Rebo. I didn't know him as well as a few of the other guys, so I was like, I'm going to go there because I'm going to be a little more uncomfortable. Man. That was the main reason. Like, I don't know him very well. I know he's a really good coach. I've heard really great things about him, but I don't really know who he is. So if I don't know him, I'm probably going to be tested a little more.
Yeah.
And he challenged me every day for 4 years. So,
man, yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah. I admire you seeking out the challenge.
Right? Yeah.
A lot of people don't do that, but that's the key to success.
Yep.
That's the key to growth, is finding those uncomfortable situations. For a player, like, stay at the school where you're sitting behind somebody in your sophomore year, mm-hmm. and your minutes are fluctuating. It's a tough year for varsity level sophomore.
It is.
Coaches, go to where you're going to be challenged as a coach, where it's not easy and you're comfortable. Get outside your comfort zone. So I admire that about you. And the other thing that I feel like you use, people want to know how you speed up the process of success. Find a good mentor.
Yeah.
Find somebody who's going to show you how to do a handbook for your program. Find somebody who's going to challenge you every single day and build you up to be a next level coach.
Yep.
Like you did with Rebo.
Yep.
That's the secret, is finding a mentor, mm-hmm. finding somebody in that space that you can really just learn from.
Yeah.
So there are two ways to do something. Yep. There you go.
So there's, I think, two things for growth as a coach. It's you find somebody who's going to let you do a ton of work, right, and learn through failure, or it's going to find somebody who's going to hold you accountable to what a standard of excellence looks like. Mm-hmm. And both of those can be productive. And I've experienced both, and they both played big parts of my development as a coach.
Which kind was Rebo?
Hold you to the standard of excellence to the T.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a standard of what winning looks like. There's a standard of how a program should be ran. And we're not accepting anything less than that standard.
Mm.
Every day. And I mean every day. Like, people look at Harvard Westlake and they're like, oh, it's a private school. You guys have resources. You guys, like, yeah, it's a private school. Yeah, we have resources. But they don't understand that every kid has to get into school. Every kid's got to have A's and B's on their transcripts,
yep.
right? Every kid has to go through the interview process. Every kid's got to have their letters of recommendation. And everyone has to have everything submitted before the deadline, which is in January, right? If you don't have that, you're not going to Harvard Westlake.
Right.
There's nothing that we can do as coaches. And we don't have a way to get athletes in. They have to get in based on who they are as a person, how they interview, what their grades look like. And we just hope that on the day admissions comes out that we have guys that we like. We don't have athletic aid. We have financial aid, but that's just based on your family's dynamic.
Yeah.
No host families, no I-20s, no scholarships. So
yeah.
To run a program at the highest level like Rebo has and succeed the way the program has, with those barriers, it's incredible, and it takes work every single day.
100%. So there's the standard of excellence, right? That's what you started to adopt, mm-hmm. just being there as a coach. What would you say are the other, say, top three things that you learned from that program that you're going to carry with you through your basketball coaching career?
Everything matters. Everything. Hmm. What type of ball you practice with matters. Like, when we're going through a drill or a practice plan, are we focused on details in that practice plan or for that drill? It matters,
yeah.
right? Like, you guys are players wearing the same color shoes on game day. It matters. Like, that was the main focus that I took away from it. Be more prepared than your opponent. We're not going to be out-prepared. Like, I think that's the difference in why Harvard Westlake has had success in winning back-to-back state championships, is a team might be a little better than us talent-wise. It might be even. But we know everything that's going to come from that game. Like, we know every set that you're going to run. We've covered anything that you've thought of, we've covered. We've covered things that maybe we haven't even seen that we think you might do based on how a game went earlier in the season. Like, our preparation's got to be strong. And then you hold your leaders or your better players to the same standard as everybody else. There's no special treatment. You're a part of this team, you're a part of this program, and you're getting treated just like everybody else. Just because you're good at basketball doesn't make you exempt from coaching or culture or our structure.
Love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Now, which game was most exciting for you over these last 4 years? You guys have had some nail biters, emotional games, competitive games, state championship games. Which one's most memorable for you and why?
I felt like I was never a winner. At this point in my career, I didn't win anything. I won a league championship as a head coach, but I just considered that, like, and I, like, no offense to my West Torrance players, but I was like, our league is not very strong. Like, we should win league, right? Mm-hmm. The championship game against St. Joseph's for state, our first state championship for open division, because that was the first time that we won a meaningful championship. And it was strictly that, like, we accomplished the job,
yeah.
Right? Like, so that was my favorite game, just for the fact that we came together as a team, we did what needed to be done to get the result that we wanted. And that's a big hurdle for the program.
Yeah.
And it comes off the back of, we lost to Centennial in the championship, CIF championship the year before. And we lost by 21. We got, they took it to us. Mm-hmm. And for all of those players to come back in that state regional game against Centennial before we played St. Joseph's and know we were going to win and had that fire that we're going to get our get back, and that led to that St. Joseph championship. So I guess it's a 2-for-1 because I've never seen those guys more focused. They were not going to lose that game against Centennial.
Mm-hmm.
So we got our get back there and then went up to Sacramento and won our state championship. So it just took an effort from everybody, and everybody wanted it so bad.
Yeah.
So that was special.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And I totally blanked. I had a great question. Oh, players. Been able to coach some high-level players.
Yes.
And you talk about holding them accountable. What does that look like? Because I think every school in Southern California has a dude, right?
Where, yep.
We have a bunch of talent. Holding high-level players accountable, what does that look like on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I think it's non-basketball-related accountability. Your effort, your energy, your leadership, your talk, and not giving you excuses for a mistake or poor performance. So if your better guys aren't willing to be your hardest workers, you don't have a chance. And if they want to take a day off from practice, they're going to hear about it, because you're not allowed to take that day off from practice. It's not happening. So I think that's the main focus, is that, like, they can have a bad practice. Like, we give them grace to have bad practices. They're not perfect. We're going to have bad practices as coaches. But your effort, your energy, your talk, your leadership, that can't be bad. So if it is bad, they're going to hear about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man. You said earlier that you're always looking for that level up, that next level up. And part of coaching, getting to higher levels, is,
yep,
making sure you have your degree.
Yes.
So I know this, you completed your degree. How long ago now?
I completed my degree on Sunday.
Sunday, okay.
I'm still waiting for my degree to post and say graduate, I've done all my work for it.
Awesome. Yes. And what pushed you to do that, right? Because, you know, you're at arguably the top school in the country.
Yep.
Coaching and getting opportunities to have your LA Elite program. You have, yep, these things going. You have a wife. Like, you have things going.
Yep.
What pushed you over the edge to go ahead and complete your degree?
Yeah, good question. So from when I graduated high school until today, it took me 13 years to get a bachelor's degree. I didn't think I needed a degree because I was like, I'm going to coach high school and I'm going to coach club. But I've already been a head coach without a degree. Like, so why do I need this degree? You get around an environment like Harvard-Westlake where academic success is valued,
mm-hmm,
and you see what it can do for you. That was the big focus. But the main reason, and a lot of my story goes back to my father, is my father passed away about 3 years ago now, and he never got the opportunity to kind of push himself to excellence in what he wanted out of his life. So he always wanted for both of his children, me and my sister Rachel, to get our degrees. It was important to him. And I took a different path. I was always doing things, I would say, just not normal, just making my own path, my own lane. My sister went to a high academic college. She got her bachelor and master's in 4 years.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Really knocked it out, really smart woman. So when he passed away about 3 years ago, I was in and out of trying to finish, but I wasn't really motivated. So I really pushed myself for him, just because I think he'd be proud to know that I did it.
Yeah.
And then it became a situation of, wow, like I was a year ago, I was like, wow, I'm almost done with my degree. Like, this is actually gonna happen. No matter how I tried to talk myself out of it sometimes and wanted to quit, I was like, no, we're finishing. No matter how we gotta finish, we're gonna do it. So I was like, well, what am I gonna do now that I have my degree? I've been at the same school for 3-4 years now. We've had tons of success, but you can only be a better version of yourself if you change your environment to be uncomfortable again. Like, I felt like I was getting comfortable at Harvard Westlake because I've been there for 4 years. And yet you learn every day, but you're around the same people, the same environment. I just felt like I needed a new place to learn.
Yeah.
So I started looking at, like, there was a couple options. So it's either be a head high school coach at hopefully a more prestigious school with resources like Harvard Westlake, or it's go the collegiate route. And I've already been a head high school coach. And it wasn't at the highest level, but I felt like I've already done some of that. And I'm in a fortunate position right now that my wife and I have been married for about a year. We do not have kids. So if I'm going to try to coach college, this is the time to try to coach college, just before we decide to start a family. So that's kind of why I decided to step away from Harvard Westlake and step away from Los Angeles Elite to find that next chapter of growth.
Yeah. And yeah. How tough was that letting go of Los Angeles Elite?
I cried.
Yeah,
I cried. It was hard. Like, I mean, and it was so weird because I was so ready to be done. Hmm. Like, with the club aspect of basketball, it's a very difficult industry to manage. You're managing hundreds of players, hundreds of parents, tons of tournaments. You're handling recruiting. You're handling the gear orders. You're handling just so many moving pieces for so many different people, and doing it for 11 years is a long time. So I was just a little burnt out of club basketball as a whole. But then once it started becoming official, and like me stepping away and turning things over to Jeff Miles, who's the head coach at Artesia, and Lonnie Bennett, who's the assistant coach at St. Anthony High School, and turning things over to them to kind of continue the program, it kind of shook me. Like, it's actually Tuesday, our documentary came out called Rise Above. And it's a journey of three individuals trying to go from post-COVID to college. So it was the producer, I'm sorry, the director was Seth Shapiro from Diesel Films. We got connected on Twitter, actually. Wow. I put out a tweet right after COVID saying, hey, I just want to connect with all LA creatives. And he responds, he's like, hey, let's do a documentary. I'm like, oh, this is cap. Like, there's no way. Like, this random dude just hit me up. Like, let's do a documentary. Like, what does that mean? And he knew Chris Johnson. And they talked. And Chris gave a green light to him that it would be good for us to pursue this documentary. So me and Seth hopped on a call. He wanted to know about the program. And he's like, well, do you have a few players that have interesting storylines that we can follow? And we had three players at the time. Cord Stansberry, who's from Shadow Hills, so that's like Palm Desert, you know, area, so pretty far away. Jaden Bush, who St. Anthony High School, and he was from Carson. And then Marco Kenz, who's from St. John Bosco, originally from Ghana. So we had three players on the team, and they all had individual storylines, and we were just filming post-COVID, so that June through, when club kind of started back up.
Mm-hmm.
And anything you could think would happen in a movie happened for those kids. I mean, it's unfortunate, like, some of the adversity that they had to go through, but it really gave a full perspective on what it looks like for the non-3, 4, 5 star athletes in their journey to trying to play collegiate basketball. And it's something that, like, these kids are going to have forever to document their path. And the fact that they were all successful and how they got there, it was awesome.
Save that. Watch the documentary.
Yeah.
That's what I say. We're not going to tell the story.
Like, yeah.
Yes. And where can we find the documentary?
Yeah, Rise Above is actually on Apple TV. So you can go watch it on Apple TV. Please go watch the documentary.
Go support them.
It's a great story.
We're adding the give me a movie poster. We're
I will. I love it. I love it. We'll do that.
Yep.
We'll do that.
Man, that's awesome. And so, what a journey for you. I mean, I knew some of this. I didn't know all of it.
Yep.
And so just the young start as coach and accidentally growing a club program to so many teams. And what was behind it all is your work ethic and your desire to keep on improving. Yeah. And that, man, that's what I'm about. That's what I appreciate to these kids is like, just keep getting better. And it's, you don't know, but you're actually speaking to me right now too about things that I'm going through. I'm like, man, this is super encouraging. So thank you for sharing all that.
Of course. Process oriented.
Yes.
I wasn't always process oriented. And once you start to put away the destination and you start to focus on the journey of it, like, and it sounds cliche, but it's so true. Like, just try to affect the people that you're around consistently, have good relationships, do things for the right reasons, and everything works out for your individual success. I don't try to do anything more than that. I try to keep it pretty simple.
Yeah, Karina, you're taking notes, right? That's a post. Okay, yeah, that's a good one. No, that's amazing.
I had film training.
I actually need you to send that to me today. I need that right now. That's beautiful. I appreciate it.
I had film training. Actually, funny thing about the documentary, we did our first interview, like sit down interview, full crew. Like, they spent tons of money on this. Like, it was a professional documentary, and the director's like, "Oh, you're a natural at this," and I'm like, "I'm only good at two things." Talking and talking shit. That's it. So, no, but a lot of practice. Yeah.
No, man. This is something else I didn't know how good you speak, and that's part of being a coach, right?
Yeah.
Especially at the next level, is how you communicate. And when you're on the mic, you know, as an assistant, you won't have that opportunity as much.
Correct.
But once you become a head coach, I know you're going to get there, just because of the grind that you have. Barring any injuries, no.
No, you ain't wrong. You ain't wrong. I get hurt being a coach. It's like, I can't believe it, man. I get up to tie my shoes and trip. Like, I don't, but hopefully we'll figure that out here. That's the next goal for me, is injury prevention.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. See, you were supposed to, remember you were an athletic training aide or a physical therapist.
Oh, yeah, I was a PTA.
Maybe that's what you were supposed to be doing.
See, that's why I went into physical therapy originally, because I kept getting hurt. But then even when I left, I still kept getting hurt. So obviously I wasn't listening to my own advice. So.
Absolutely. So hopefully this show comes out on July 15th.
Yep.
And so you can announce now.
Yep.
And let the world know. You know, the next opportunity you're taking.
Yeah, so I was trying to find a place in college, like I said. And originally, I was like, hey, I just want to go be a GA, because I wanted to humble myself going at the very bottom and just figure it out, see what happens, and get a master's. That was the most important part of me wanting to be a collegiate coach, is I just paid for my bachelor out of pocket. I have no money anymore because it was expensive.
Yeah.
So how can I get a free master's degree? So I got fortunate enough to get connected with Coach Brian Rooney, who's the head coach at Cal State East Bay. I went through the interview process. We've had a relationship just because of players and recruiting and being familiar with each other. And I was fortunate enough to be offered a full-time assistant coach position at Cal State East Bay. So really excited about it. I've actually never lived out of Los Angeles either.
Oh.
So I'm very excited to live in a different part.
The weather's a little different.
A little different. But I'm definitely excited for change and being uncomfortable again. Like, at the end of the day, like, he's going to push me to be better. It's a completely different level of basketball. So more responsibilities, different responsibilities. And just see where the ball takes me.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
I'll be the first to say it on this actual day. So congratulations.
I appreciate it.
Look forward to seeing you grow and connect you with players and that whole other side. Like, you're on the other side of recruiting now. And
of course.
Whole different side of the game to learn.
Yep.
And, man, just congrats on that.
Thank you. Awesome. Really excited.
That's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Man, we're going to roll to the next part of the show.
Let's do it.
All right. So it's my Rushmore. Top four tough players of all time. Who you got?
Who do I have? All right, so one, Dennis Rodman, obviously, willing to do anything and everything for team success.
Is there a difference between tough and psycho?
There is.
But you have both, okay.
But when you have both, you're a little tougher, I feel like. Okay. Yeah, which leads me to my next one, Isaiah Ryder. Oh yeah. Isaiah Ryder. That's a good one. Yeah, Isaiah Ryder. I loved watching him as a kid. Because, look, yes, he was skilled. Yes, he was athletic. But he didn't take anything from anybody at any time. It was not going to happen. And I love that about him. Yeah. Number three, I'm going to say Bruce Bowen. And it's a different type of tough. Because he had a job to do every single night, and that was guard the other team's best player. And he had to stay on that island by himself for 48 minutes every night.
Yeah.
And it took a mental toughness for him to do that. He wasn't always the one that was barking or loud, but mentally tough for Bruce Bowen. And last was Chauncey Billups. Chauncey Billups, he was the heart of that Detroit Pistons group. And without his leadership and his resolve and his toughness there, I don't think they're as successful as they are. Everyone could say, you could say Rasheed Wallace there, but he was the rah-rah guy. He was the guy that would, you know, outlandishly be vocal about it or tough. But I think Chauncey Billups showed real toughness in being that leader and being mature.
100%. Yep. I like that four. I like that four. The Isaiah Ryder one's a sleeper.
Yep. Sleeper
great,
pick.
Great pick.
Yep.
I got Dennis Rodman.
Yep.
I have to have Dennis Rodman up there. It's just the definition of basketball toughness, mm-hmm. I think. You know, so many games with 30 rebounds and no points and just diving on loose balls and being the enforcer on the team, I think is all amazing. Bruce Bowen was a good one too. He doesn't get celebrated enough.
Yeah.
I love defenders. So
that's why I was thinking so hard before we started. I was trying to be like,
I like where you're going with that. Next, I have Ben Wallace. So along next to Chauncey, Ben Wallace, somebody who accepts his role, knew his role, and was an all-star in his role.
Absolutely.
By playing defense and rebounding. And undersized, actually, for mm-hmm. the position he played. Came from a D2 college.
Virginia Union.
All these things, like, I mean, he was just a dog.
Yep, I agree.
I love Ben Wallace, man. So, Ben Wallace, my third, I'm going to have to go, I'm going to have to go with Scottie Pippen.
Okay,
now,
okay.
Now, see, Scottie, for me, because the mental toughness to know that you're just, not just as good as Jordan, but you are good as Jordan. You're in that same breath. And to take a back seat for all those years for the success of a team and to do the dirty work as mm-hmm. well. Like, he was in the fight every single day.
Yep.
And if you go back, I watched those old games because I was young. Like, mm-hmm. I watched Jordan, but I didn't watch Jordan. Now I go back and actually watch those games. And if you look at it, like, Scottie was handling
the glue.
Man, he was doing everything. Mm-hmm. So. Love Scottie Pippen for that. Number four, I'm going to have to go with Spaceman from Sunset Park. No, I'm joking. I just saw the movie poster. But if y'all don't know Terrence Howard from Sunset Park. My fourth, dang, you got some good ones. Isaiah Thomas.
Okay.
Isaiah Thomas, just playing through injury, little dude on the court, mm-hmm. but big heart. You couldn't do anything with him, man.
Yep.
And so
getting left off Team USA team and having to recover from that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's tough. It's mm-hmm. tough, man.
Absolutely.
So, Isaiah Thomas. So great four. Great four.
I agree with you. I like it.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So our next one is Fix the Net. So hand over the basketball. A misconception about basketball that you want to make clear to people.
Yes. A misconception about basketball. It's going to be less of a misconception and more of a hot take, so please do not slander me out there, everybody. But I am not a fan of non-paint touch twos.
Non-paint touch twos.
Mid-range pull-up.
Mid-range pull-up before you touch the paint at all?
Before you get a paint touch. Just mid-range contested, even open pull-ups. Do I put the ball in now or do I put it in? After I explain.
Yes.
So, my hot take for non-paint touch twos, I have become slightly obsessed with the analytical side of offense in basketball. And you look at points per possession. It's the most efficient way to have a high-functioning offense. So how do you do that? How do you become a high points per possession team? You get paint touches because you get to the free throw line. Free throw lines are scoring with no time off the clock. Adds to your points of possession. Secondly, you shoot threes. You make them, you get extra point. You miss your space in the court, and you get another opportunity to add an extra point. So for me, I don't find value on offense in shooting non-paint touch twos. So that's my hot take. It's not necessarily a misconception, But if you look at the Boston Celtics, who won the NBA championship this year, yeah, they'll take some mid-range shots, but they're mostly living or dying by that three-point line or getting downhill to paint touch twos because they're trying to increase the volume of how many points they score over a 48-minute game. And I think the same thing goes for college and high school is if you can find a way to get more shot attempts to score more points, you have a better chance to win. So,
thank you. I'm going to fix the net. Now I'm going to argue with you after you drop it. Because
and I know you will, and so will everybody else.
No, in a good way, though, because I think it actually, it can actually, these two can live in the same world.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest from last week, Coach Matt Sargent of Notre Dame,
yep.
You know, he was, they shot a lot of threes 2 years ago.
Yep.
Most ever, or something like that. Then this past year, he flipped it. They shot half the number of threes, and his whole thing is paint touches as well. Getting to the paint,
yep.
And getting to the hole. I'm just thinking putting those two worlds together almost of where it's like not shooting as many threes as you think you have to, mm-hmm. right? And then also just make sure you're getting the paint touches.
Yep.
But also the mid-range isn't dead. I think a lot of people, for scorers, let me say it like this. If you're a scorer, you're able to score in the mid-range. That does not mean
you have your freedom.
You should be always shooting yep. mid-range shots and mm-hmm. depend on them. I think you see when I think it was on Gilbert's show the other day, we were talking about people who live in the mid-post, mm-hmm. but they were like, look at all the people who, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker. Oh, you're talking about like superstars.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the masses
mm-hmm.
and these
exactly.
kids. Like, we can talk about the mid-range all you want. Yeah, those guys who live there and
do your
that,
thing.
They're superstars. They yep. get paid $50 million a year almost now mm-hmm. to do that.
Correct.
But for the masses, the paint touches, playing off 2 feet.
Yep.
And open threes, the off the dribble threes, your percentage drops almost 20% when you take yeah. a dribble. And like, so actually I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. But with that being said, like you made a really good point is that everyone's going to have a role on their team mm-hmm. and you have to embrace that role. For Harvard Westlake last year, Trent Perry, Robert Hinton, they took a ton of mid-range jump shots, right? Like Robert Hinton saved our butt with mid-range jump shots in a few yeah. of these games that we had because he was so efficient at it and he did so well in that role. But I think for role players, it's really important. If you get paint touches, you're also collapsing the defense to yeah. allow that kick out for open three-point shots. Yeah. So I think it's really important that everyone knows their role, of course, on the team, but you're shooting shots that can get you the points you need to win games.
Absolutely.
So, I like that. And I love Matt Sargent. Yeah. I do. I love Matt. And he said that they won a state championship the year where he shot a lot of threes, right? And I think there's a reason for that.
They did it both ways. They yep. did it with a yep. lot of threes, and then last
the
year.
The CIF championship yep. this year with mid-range. Yep. Yeah, that's interesting. Won
yep.
both.
Yep. So, yep. love talking basketball.
Always.
The regular people get bored, but we don't
no,
care.
No, no such thing.
It's a basketball show.
Yep.
all right. Now, you're the interviewer. I'm the interviewee. We flipped the script.
Yep.
Two questions for me. Anything in the world.
The one question that I have for you is, what is your biggest hot take in basketball?
My biggest hot take in basketball?
The ones that people aren't going to agree with. The masses.
Coaches, high school coaches need to stop running plays so much. I am a big believer in teaching them to play basketball and make reads. How you taught your club team,
yep.
I think needs to be focused on more in basketball, mm-hmm. High school basketball, because it prepares them for the next level more. And it turns... Let me say this, and it depends on the level. I'm just talking. Yep. I'm talking more Southern California basketball players are so skilled and have ability.
Mm-hmm.
Now teach them how to run actions.
Yep.
And the reads on actions, and you can run whatever play you want in the world.
Yep.
But if they can read actions, because especially in the Mission League, somewhere like that,
mm-hmm.
everybody knows your plays.
Yep.
So you got to teach them how
yes,
to read basketball. But you see a lot of coaches come out here and do the video game thing and call a play every single time down, and you're mm-hmm. not. The players aren't going to be ready for college. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to be ready for college because they know how to listen to you.
Yeah.
I need them to be able to think for themselves.
Yep.
And for you to be able to trust them, and so I am, stop running the play every time down.
Yeah.
Dead ball situations, close game situations, absolutely.
Of course.
For most of the game, though, give them actions and reads.
Yeah.
I think there's a big difference in that.
Yeah. There's a big term with that is you have to be a 0.5-second decision maker.
Yes.
So you can't teach that if you're running plays, obviously. Yeah.
And yeah. then you can cross your feet on defense.
Yep.
We were taught never, and I taught it.
That's
for,
true.
I
That's,
taught it for
you're
years.
You're absolutely right.
I'm sitting here looking, I'm like, Oh, man, Drew Holiday crossed his feet a lot.
Get to a spot.
And he is amazing at it, so those are my two.
Those are the two. Okay. Those are two good hot takes. Next question. Let's see. If you had to be in any other career outside of basketball, what would it be?
Marriage therapist. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Why is that?
I do it already, so I've officiated 9 weddings.
Wow. Okay.
Me and my wife do marriage counseling. Wow. I love love. I love marriage. I love giving people tools to work through their issues and being real with them. I think there's a lot of fluff out there, and if you go on the internet and read about marriage, it's just so much, and I think I know the truth about marriage, and I want to just share that with people, and people have successful relationships, because I think successful marriages create successful kids, and then you can start a legacy with, you know, people who are feeling secure, understanding relationships, understanding how to communicate, and it leads to so many, what is it, a more productive way of living in the long term, less toxic things.
Absolutely.
You know, we watch these dating shows. We're watching Perfect Match with my wife last night. We're just like breaking down like, oh, okay, so those are daddy issues, obviously, right there. And how do we, like, what would they need to help them overcome that to actually be prepared for a relationship and all that kind of stuff. And so I just, I'd be a marriage counselor.
Yeah. I got my bachelor degree in psychology.
Oh, nice.
So that was
a
big component. So
yeah.
That's awesome.
I study psychology like crazy. I changed my major like 7 times.
Yeah.
Psychology was it for a semester, so I got some of those classes. But I just study that stuff, marriage books and all that kind of stuff all the time.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, and I'm a great officiant.
There you go.
I love officiating weddings.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I make it fun.
You're a good preparer for your officiant role?
What do you mean?
You prepare your speech, your...
Yes.
Yeah,
I do.
You prepare.
I have to. I can't. I free flow a little bit. I leave space to free flow in certain parts. But most of the time, because for me, that ceremony part is so important for the wife and her parents, right? The groom that really doesn't care. But for the parents and, you know, people who love the bride, they need that part to be beautiful. And so I just make sure it is light, joyful, and beautiful, no matter what. And it's quick.
Yep.
20 minutes. I don't need to sit there and do all this extra stuff. It's 15 to 20 minutes. Let's go party.
Love it.
So, yep.
As it should be.
Yeah. So, if you're looking for a wedding, this
shit, you got to get your website going.
I have one.
Oh, look.
I do this.
Yeah, he does this. This is what I do.
24-second shot clock. Let the people know where they can find you on social media and any message that you have for them.
Yep. You can find me at @coach_pain. On both X and Instagram.
We call it Twitter still over here.
I call it Twitter too, but I didn't want to call it Twitter.
We still call it Twitter.
You can find me at @coach_pain on Twitter and Instagram. And the biggest thing is just be your true self, be genuine to who you are, and chase your passions, chase your goals, and treat people the right way.
Man,
thank you for having me.
Man.
Appreciate
amazing,
it.
Amazing show, man.
Yep.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.